We're beginning here on the top of Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara, two lines down, says, "Amar le Abaye Rav Yosef." Abaye asked his Rebbe Rav Yosef, "Biyav mitzat shma biyaula? Does entering in a partial sense the equivalent of entering in your entirety, or not?" Now, this is a more general question, which is not being posed here, as posed in the Gemara in Zvachim, as to whether when someone enters into the Azara in a partial manner, is that considered to be a biyah, an entrance? There is a machloket whether biyav mitzat shma biyah. Here, Abaye's question is specifically in the context of our Gemara here, which is the requirement for a tevilah before you enter into the Azara. Rashi thinks this is according to Shita Rabbi Yehuda, that the tevilah is purely a din derabanan. It's a reminder to see if you were tamei. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, since it's only a reminder, do you only need it when you enter fully into the Azara? But if you're only entering partially into the Azara, you don't need it. According to Tosafot, the question is posed both according to Rabbi Yehuda and Ben Zoma, because Tosafot thinks that even according to Ben Zoma, there's a possibility of having a tarabe mikveh and entering the Azara that is not deoraita in a case where you're not entering to do avoda, but you're just entering. In that instance, you also will require only a tevilah midirabanan. So according to Tosafot, the question is posed according to both of those shitot. And the question is, since it's only a precautionary tevilah, do you only need it when you enter fully into the Azara? Or do you need it even when you enter in partially to the Azara? Now, the case where you enter in partially to the Azara is a case like the Mitzorah. Mitzorah, where he has to stink in his thumbs and his big toes into the Azara in order to get the Dama Korban placed on them. So there he's going to enter Biyav Mikzat. Does he require a Tevilah in order to do that? Samalei, Behonot, Yochichu, Shehen Biyad Mimikzat. Behonot, the big toes and the thumbs of the Mitzorah will prove this point. Betanya, we have a Beraita, Mitzorah, Tovel, Vomeid, Bishar, Niganor. Mitzorah goes to the mikveh on the 8th day, and then he stands in Shar, Niganor. So you see that you do have to go to the mikveh in order to have Biyam Mikzat. Tosafot over here says, this proves my point, that this question can't just be on Rabbi Yehuda. Because for Rabbi Yehuda, how is this an answer? Rabbi Yehuda argues on this position of the Chachamim that we just brought in the Beraita. So how could you say that this is a proof to Rabbi Yehuda's position that you need mikveh by biyav mikzat? You bring a position that doesn't even agree with Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, Tosafot says the answer is because it's applying both to Ben Zoma and Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, the answer is relevant because we see that for a biyav mikzat, somebody does require mikveh over here. In the end, he defends Rashi and he says, maybe you can say over here that since here we have a milah by the mitzorah, okay, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of that milah by mitzorah. But nevertheless, by Shar Adam, he will hold of that milah, because he doesn't have the same situation by other people. By the mitzvah, he already went to the mikveh the night before. So therefore, in a case where it's the mitzvah, he waives the need for tevilah. But in a normal case, he would require tevilah with the same trappings of what a mitzvah would have required had he not gone to the mikveh prior. And that would be even for biyav mikzat. And that is the answer to the Gemara, that even by biyav mikzat here, you would require a tevilah. Ibailu, ma'ashu yasis sagina ruka v'yishkot. What would be the case if he makes a very long knife and he does shechita? Once again, this is asked in the Gemara in Zvachim as to whether one can shecht an animal in this way, and the Gemara's conclusion there is that it is fine, because the animal needs to be lifnei Hashem, or the shechita needs to be lifnei Hashem, not the person executing the shechita needs to be lifnei Hashem. So there is a possibility of someone doing shechita with a long knife far away from the animal. Over there we said a tamei cannot do it, because we're worried about him coming into contact with the animal, making the animal tamei. But otherwise, in terms of the Qurban itself, we would be fine with you doing the Shechita with a long knife. The question is, do we here require you to do a Tevilah in order to do this? You're no longer entering into the Azara. So because of that, do you not require a Tevilah? Or, since you're performing some sort of Avodah, we will require a Tevilah. That's what the Gemara asks here. Tibai le Ben Zoma, Tibai le Rabbonon. You should ask this question in the position of Ben Zoma, who requires you for Avoda de Oraita to go into the mikveh, and Tibai the Rabbonon, that Palig Alei de Rabbi Yehuda, that argue on Rabbi Yehuda, who say that a Mitzorah requires Tevilah, but not an Adam. A regular Adam does not require a Tevilah. Tibai le Ben Zoma, the question should be posed in the position of Ben Zoma, Ad Kan lo Mechaya Ben Zoma, but Gavai. Zoma only requires this type of Tevilah when you enter into the Azara itself. Aval Livrai, if you're outside, no. Odilma Ateliim Shuchai. But here maybe we could say otherwise and say maybe the question should be he might be drawn in. Once he's already executing the Avoda from the outside, now maybe be drawn into the Azara and go in without a Tevilah. And that would be problematic in terms of Ben Zoma. So the question here is, will he be drawn after the animal and go into the Azara? With regards to Tamei, we don't worry about that, because the Tamei is aware that he can't go into the Azara, it's a Chiyuv Karet. So over there by the Tamei, we're only worried about him coming into contact with the animal, not actually being drawn into the Azara. By a Tahor, where otherwise he should be able to go into the Azara. There's no Chiyuv Karet. It's just this problem of going to the mikveh, the requirement that he go to the mikveh beforehand. Over there, we worry about the fact that he might be drawn in by the Shkita and go into the Azara. So going to Ben Zoma requires a Tvila Midoraita for doing Avoda. Do we say that that Tvila Doraita is only to enter into the Azara fully, but if you're on the outside, we're okay with that? Or do we say, no, we want him to take this tefillah even when he's on the outside because there's a possibility that he might be drawn into the Azara. And as a precautionary measure, we want you to have a tefillah even if you're not involved in being inside the Azara at this point, but you're engaged in something that might draw you in. At Tibai, the Rabbanan, the Pligi, the Rabbi Yehuda, leaving me a question for the Rabbanan that argue in Rabbi Yehuda and say that Kol Adam does not require a tefillah. Adkan lo kamrei rabbonin hotam de lo kavid avoda. That's only over there, because there you're talking about in the context of mitzora. Mitzora is just bia b'mikzad, he sticks his thumbs in, he's not necessarily doing real avoda. So for bia, there we don't require any special tefillah. But when it comes to doing avoda itself, there they might. Avahocha to kavid avoda lo. Maybe over here when he's doing actual avoda, they will require some sort of tefillah. Odilma loshna, or maybe it makes no difference, and they would say here as well that they do not require a tefillah. Take, we leave that as an unresolved issue as to whether in this circumstance where he's performing avoda but standing outside the Azara, does he require tefillah, both according to Ben Zoma and according to the Chachamim, the Rabbanan that argue on the position of Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Kol Adam, whether they need a tefillah going in. Now the Gemara moves on to the discussion of the Mishnah of Chamesh Tefillot Vasara Kiddushim Tovel. Regards to the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, he goes 5 times into the mikveh, and he has to wash his hands and his feet 10 times during the day. We'll get to that in the next Mishnah, we'll discuss it, and then further on, the sources for all of this. Tarabanan, Chavesh Tfilot, Vasara Kiddushim, Tovel, Kohen Gadol, Umekadesh Bo Beyom, Vekulan Bakodesh, Vepeta Parva, all of them in the Kodesh and Beta Parva, Chutz Mirishona, except for the first one, Shaya Bachol, which was done in the area that was not Kodesh, which was Agav Sharamayim. As we discussed yesterday, that was the other mikveh that was found above the Sharamayim, and that was a mikveh of Chol. Ubitzad Lishkato Aita, and we quoted this earlier back on Daf Yutet, that was next to or adjacent to the Lishka of the Kohen Gadol. There the Gemara discussed which Lishka of the Kohen Gadol was that. Was that the Lishka of Palhedrin, or was that the Lishka of Tinas? So Amar Abayi. Now, Tosafot over here discusses, how is it possible that you have a mikveh that's on the roof of the Beit HaParva, because the Gemara says that Aliyot lo nitkadshu. When it comes to the Azara, the upper levels were not Kodesh. So if the mikveh is on the upper level, how is it Kodesh? Therefore, Tosafot over here says that it did sit above the roof of the Lishkot that were there, but those Lishkot were submerged into the ground, and the floor of the mikveh was actually level with the Azara. But then Tosafot runs into a problem, because back on Yuted we said there was a Misiba Ola. There was a spiral staircase that went up from Lishkat HaMedichin up into the mikveh of the Beit HaParva. If that's the case, what do you need a staircase for if it's level with the floor of the Azara? So Tosafot actually says that it's totally enclosed, and you actually can't get into it from the Azara because of privacy. If you're going to the mikveh, the Kohen Gadol is going to the mikveh, why would you want it open? And the only way to enter it was actually descend into the Lishkat HaMedichin and then take the spiral staircase up. He says, well, you'll have to say now that Lishkat HaMedichin is Kodesh, because otherwise the mikveh would not be Kodesh. The only way the mikveh is Kodesh if it opens up into an area that's Kodesh. So since it's opening up into the Lishkat HaMedichin, it must be that Lishkat HaMedichin itself is Kodesh. And he asks from Rabbi Yochanan says, Michilot lo nitkachu. When it comes to the tunnels, they are not Kodesh. Tosafot differentiates and says that's only tunnels that open up onto Har HaBayit, lo nitkadshu. But tunnels that open up into the Azara, they are considered to be Kodesh. And therefore, the Lishkat Madichim, even though it's below ground, is Kodesh because it opens up into the Azara. And the Beit HaParva, or the Mikveh, the Beit HaParva, which you ascend from the Beit HaMadichim into that Mikveh, that is Kodesh because it opens from a place that is Kodesh. And it's level with the floor of the Azara. Tosafot's solution's interesting, but it's also a little strange, because as we said before back on Daf Yutet, that the Lishkat HaMedichin is not exactly the cleanest place. And why would you want to have the Kohen Gadol or anybody have to go to that mikveh, go through the Lishkat HaMedichin in order to go up there? So others suggest that the staircase was actually outside the Lishkat HaMedichin, it was on the side of Lishkat HaMedichin. Other Rishonim say that when the Gemara says Aliyot lo nitkadshu, is when the Aliyah, or the upper level, is sitting on top of a room. So that top of that area is not Kodesh. You can't eat Kodeshim up there because it doesn't have Kedushat Azara. But that's because, in general, a room or a chamber is made for its internal use, its internal utility. And therefore, they only make Kadesh the part that was internal to it. But if someone intended for the upper level also to be enclosed or a chamber, then it also have Kedushat. The statement of Aliyot Lo Nitkadshu is not about Aliyot in general. It's about aliyot that are sitting on top of a chamber. Open aliyot. Those aliyot don't need tshuva because the whole purpose of the roof is to enclose what's below, not for use or utility above it. But if you have something else above it, then that also could be kodesh. And that's how they solve the problem here of the mikveh above the beit parva being kodesh. Others suggest just because the mikveh that was in the aliyah opened its doorway into the azara, was accessed through the azara, that was enough to make it kodesh, even though it was an aliyah. So those are three different approaches as to why this mikveh was kodesh. Now, Abaye makes a statement. Abar Abaye, shmamina, enetam. Enetam is the spring that provided the water for the Beit HaMikdash. Gvoa mikarka azara esrim v'shalosh amot. Had to be higher than the floor of the azara by 23 amot. This is based on the property of physics, that as long as water starts from a higher point, it can go up and down over mountains, as long as it ends up at a point that is lower than when it started. So Enetam is the high point, the Mikdash is the low point. To get from Enetam to the Mikdash, the water has to travel over a long distance. So as long as Enetam is higher than where it's utilized in the Mikdash, we will find the water will be able to traverse that, go through the aqueduct, and make it to the Mikdash. So what Abaye says is Enetam must be 23 amot, higher than the floor of the Azara. Titanan. Kol ha'ptachim shayu sham gvoan 20 amot. All the doorways there in the Azara were 20 amot high. Rachban 10 amot, and they were 10 amot wide. Chutz mishel ulam. The exclusion of the ulam, which was double, was 40 amot wide and 20 high. But otherwise, we know the height of the doorway is 20 amot. Betanya. Verachatz bisaro b'mayim. The pasuk says, Verachatz b'mayim et kol bisaro. From the word b'mayim, we learn that it means b'me mikveh. Kol bisaro. What does it mean that kol b'saro has to be in there? B'mayim shekol gufo alo behen. It has to be a water that can encompass or cover his whole body. B'kamehen. And how much is that? Amal amah b'rom gimel amot. You have to have a mikveh that is 1 by 1 amah and 3 amot deep. B'shiro chachamim made mikveh 40 sa'ah. Chachamim say that that contains volumetrically 40 sa'ah, and that is sufficient to allow for a person to put their entire body into the mikveh. So if you do that, you have the 20 amot of the shar, and the mikveh of Shar HaMayim sits above that, and that mikveh itself is 3 amot deep. So in order to get the water from Enetam into that mikveh, you would have to have it be 23 amot higher than the floor of the Azara, because that's where this mikveh, the water line for this mikveh, would be 23 amot above the floor of the Azara. It says, Vayiga amatikra v'ma maziva. What about the fact that the gateway itself has a mashkof, it has a roof to it? In order to have a building above that, you need to have some sort of layer of roof or above the shar itself. In addition, you need maziva. You need some sort of plastering in order to make it waterproof and to have the mikveh sit there so that it won't leak the water down. I said, Sharim de Beit HaMikdash, given the shisha ninu, the entranceways to the mikdash, since they were made out of shayish, made out of marble, b'mashu abduluhu. You don't need a very thick lintel above the archway, above the doorway or the shar, the gateway in, because it's made out of a very hard stone, and the hard stone can be very thin and still provide the base for what is built above it. You still need that mashu, whatever it is. Since it's not a full amah, they didn't worry about it. So the amount of space between the lintel, the upper edge of that gateway, and the bottom of the mikveh was a very thin layer. It's made out of hard stone, like shayish, so it didn't have to be so thick, but they didn't count it because it didn't add up to a full amah. But in Achanami, you're right, it has to be 23 plus a little more in order to get it from Enetam to this mikvah above Shar HaMayim. Over here, Tosafot discusses something that he discusses in numerous places. We actually bumped into and we discussed it heavily in the Gemara in Shabbat and Tzarichet with regards to the Levi'im carrying the Aron. What is the height of an individual? The Gemara says, well, you need 3 amot and 1 amah by 1 amah, which seems to indicate that a person is 3 amot high. Now, Tosafot over here says that's not the case, that a person is only 3 amot until their shoulders. And then the remainder of the individual is above that. Now, he says in many places in Shas, we find that a person is actually 4 amot tall. And he says, that doesn't make sense. From 3 amot of the shoulders to total of 4 amot, there's not an amah of neck and head above a person's shoulders of 3 amot. Proportionally, it just wouldn't make sense. So he says, in the places where you have 4 amot, there's some other factor there. For instance, in Kuchin, and when they're putting them into the catacombs, they needed 4 amot of depth. He says, that's for the 3 amot of the body, plus the neck and the head, plus the wall of the aron, the wood of the aron, and enough space to get them in. So because of that, you need an additional amah. With regards to Hezek Riyah and Baba Batra, that you have to have 4 amot spread between different windows, or the ground and the window or the wall, in order that a person can't see over it. It says over there, because the ground is not exactly flat, and it might be less than 3 tefachim high, but it'll give a person a little bit of an edge, or he can stand on his toes, and therefore he can see over 4 amot. So for that reason, we set 4 amot as the level which is even above the total height of the individual. And his last proof is from the carrying of the Aron by the Levim, that there the Gemara says it's 3 amot masabe katef, that they're carrying on their shoulders. And if you do the calculation, if 3 amot is that they're carrying on their shoulders, it would work. But if that is the total height of the individual, then you would have a problem with the calculation. And therefore, he believes that 3 amot is only the individual's height until his shoulders, whereas Rashi in Shabbat seems to indicate it's the total height of the individual. And Tosafot defends his position in all these different places. The problem is here. The mikveh here is only 3 amot deep. So how does an individual who is up to his shoulders 3 amot get into the mikveh if he is 3 amot up to his shoulders and his head sticks up? He has to get his head in as well. So Tosafot says two things. One is, first of all, he can bend his head over, number one. And number two is displacement of the water. When he enters into the mikveh, his body itself displaces water and raises the water level. By raising the water level, he'll also be able to get his head bent into the water. And that's how Tosafot solves the problem over here. Now he does say that how is Abaye so sure that the mikveh here is shaped as 1x1x3? Because you could shape the mikveh as 3 amot wide by 1 amot high, and you can have the Kohen Gadol lie down in it. Or you can have it 2 amot wide. How does he know for sure that it's 3 amot deep and 1x1? Tosafot in the end concludes you could have had it other ways, but Abaye assumes that that's the case, because that's the easiest way for the Kohen Gadol to go to the mikveh. And Shum Chusha the Kohen Gadol, because of the weakness of the Kohen Gadol on that day, we made it so it would be easiest way that he could go to the mikveh, and that would have most of the height in the vertical side of the mikveh, so he could stand up and go into the mikveh. The Gemara's assumption here, or Abaye's assumption, is that they dealt with a minimum mikveh, which is very interesting. Because here, who says it has to be 1x1x3? It could be even more than 3x1. It could be a mikveh that's bigger than 40 sa'ah. Who says they got exactly to the minimum of 40 sa'ah? So that might be the statement of Abaye as well, you could say. At minimum, Ein Eitam was 23 amot above the mikveh Charamayim. If the mikveh was bigger, then obviously it had to be higher. And that Tosafot does ask here as well, which is that it would not be sufficient just to be the 23 amot. Because then when the water rose to the top, what would happen? The water would overflow or go out. So it has to be that either the walls of the mikveh are higher and allows the water to collect and go up above the head of the Kohen Gadol or above the level of the entrance of the water. Or he says possibly that, yes, the water went out, but the fact is that it kept coming from Ein Eitam, and so it wasn't a problem that it overflowed. But Tosafot is aware of the fact that it's not so simple to have it just be exactly 23 amot, because it means the water is entering right at the tip or the top of the mikveh level, and that means it would never give you the full amount of water that you needed, because the water is entering at the level that the peak of the water must be. So you have to make some adjustments here, but Abaye's point is well taken, which is that for this to work, Ein Eitam has to be a minimum of 23 amot higher than the floor of the Azara, in order that this mikveh can be fed by Ein Eitam. Now the Gemara says, Parsus Adin Shabutz. It's actually the tail end of the previous Mishnah, but really should be the beginning of the next Mishnah that we do, which is before the Kohen Gadol goes into this mikveh and the Shar Hamayim, they put up a linen cloth to separate between him and the Amperitz Niyut. So now the Gemara says, why did they use a Sadin Shabutz? Why did they use this linen? Maishna Shabutz, Kedam Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says later on that they used this later on with the mikveh, Kadesh Yakir Shabbat Yom Bebigdei Butz. So that he should remember that the Avodat Yom is with the linen clothing. He shouldn't put on his eight clothing or like a regular day of a Kohen Gadol. He has to do it in the big day Lavan. So in order to remind him of that, we used Sadin of Butz that will remind him of this fact. Hachanami, so too in our case here, Shiakir Avodat Yom Bebigdei Butz. He should remember that it's Bebigdei Butz. Now, the Iker statement of Rav Kahana is later on. And Tosafot says that's because over here it's obvious that he would do this. Here is the case where you'd make the most mistake. Over here, where he's starting out the avodah of the day, and he normally gets into his eight bigdadim, and we're telling him, don't think that way. You got to think differently today. So here it makes a lot of sense to use boots. Therefore, Rav Kahana makes his statement later on. When he's switching from his bigdadim later on, bigday zahav to bigday lavan, over there, you would think he wouldn't make a mistake. As well as the fact that he's taking off his bigday zahav. What do you expect him to put on to do the new avodah? Bigday lavan, of course. Yeah, it's still there. He needed the reminder. And so that's why the Iker statement of Kahana is over there. So Rav Kahana says we do it a Sadina Boots just to remind him, to keep him active and engaged, and remind him that he has to put on the big day Lavan. And so that's where Rav Kahana's Iker statement is made. And then the Gemara brings it over to here as well and says, here, even though it's obvious that this would be helpful to have such a reminder, nevertheless, it's for the same reason, to give him this reminder and to remind him that he needs to do the avoda of the big day Boots, the big day Shan, his big day Lavan for Yom HaKippurim. Okay, now the Gemara moves on to the next Mishnah. Pashat, he took off his clothing. Yarad, he went down, v'tabal, He went to the mikveh, alav nistabek, he came out and he dried off, put on a towel bathrobe to allow it to absorb the water. If he had a big day's out, then they brought him his big day Kohen Gadol, the regular weekday 8 big adim of the Kohen Gadol, v'lavash, and he got dressed, v'kidei shetav raglav, and then he washed his hands and his feet. If he had a tamid, since the Kohen Gadol has to do all the avoda on Yom Kippurim, they bring him the korban tamid, which is the first thing of the day. Kartzo, he shechted it, umeirak acher shechita yado. And someone else finished off the shechita for him, meaning that he did the robe of Shnei Simanim, which is what is necessary for the shechita, and someone finished it off because he's got to get involved in the Kabbalat Adam right away. Kibbalat Adam, he takes the dam, vizorko, and then he was zorek the dam, shtaim shin arba, for the korban tamid. Nichnas laktirek toret, then he went in to bring the toret shel shachar, veitiv et neirot, and to fix the neirot, this was brought up in the first parak with regards to the order here of the toret before the neirot. Ula krivet rosh vet avarim, and then afterwards he takes the rosh and the avarim of the tamid, and he puts them onto the mizbeach. Veta chavitin, and then he does the chavitin, which is the chavitin of the Kohen Gadol that's brought every day, half in the morning, half in the evening. Veta yayin, the nisuch yayin that goes together with the korban tamid. Toret shel shachar itak reiva ben dam leivarim. Mishnah here gives you a principle that the toret in the morning was brought between the dam, meaning the zrika the dam of the korban tamid, and the evarim and the hakrabat evarim. Shel ben arabayim, on the other hand, in the afternoon tamid, then it was ben evarim and the sachim. It was after you already makriv the evarim on the mizbeach, but before he did the nisuch hayayin, then he brought the ketoret. And the Gemara will discuss why over all these things later on. Imaya Kohen Gadol Zakeinu Istinis. The Kohen Gadol was elderly, or he was very particular. Mechamin lo chamin. Then they make the mikvah warm for him, meaning that they heated up hot water on the day before. Matilan tochat sonein. And then they throw it into the cold water of the mikveh in order to take away the sharpness or the coldness of that water. Kadeshi tafig tzinatan. In order to warm the coldness of the water. As Rashi points out, the tafig, the word vayafag, was used in this week's parsha that we just read, which is vayafag libo, that Yaakov doesn't believe everything that its children are telling him about Yosef. So pag means to lose its flavor, to lose its smell, something that doesn't seem to be real. So over here, tafig tzinatan means to reduce the coldness of the water. And again, at the end of the parakel discusses vis-a-vis melachot and Shabbat and psikreshe. Now the Gemara says, Amrua Rabbanan Kamei de Rapapa. The Rabbanan of Rapapa's yeshiva, his Talmidim, said to him, Hadalok Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah is definitely not like Rabbi Meir. D Rabbi Meir. If it's Rabbi Meir, Kevin Damar Trei Kedusha Alevisha Avietu, that the two times that you have to wash your hands and feet every time you change clothing, that has to do with the new clothing that you're putting on, then, in this case, Hachanami Lave Trei Kedusha. On the first time he gets dressed, he should also have to do two Kedushim Alevisha, getting into the Big Day Kodesh. The fact that our Mishnah only mentions washing your hands once here indicates that this is like the Rabbonon and not like Rabbi Meir. The machlokas between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Meir we'll get to in 1 second is in terms of where the placement of the washing the hands is. As far as washing your hands after you get dressed in the new bigadim, everybody agrees you go to the mikveh, dry off, put on the new clothing, and wash your hands. The only question is when you stripped off the clothing you were in before, when did you wash your hands? According to the Chachamim, you wash your hands, then you strip down your bigadim, and then you go to the mikveh. According to Rabbi Meir, you first strip down your clothing, then wash your hands, then go to the mikveh. The assumption of the Talmidim Rapapa is that Rabbi Meir's shito is premised on the fact that the both kiddushim yadayim v'raglayim relate to the new clothing that you're going to put on. And that's why you strip off the clothing first, and then only do the kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. So based on that, they say here, oh, you understand why the Chachamim say there's only one hand washing here? Because he's stripping off his clothing from home, his whole clothing. So that does not require Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim before he takes them off. That's why the Chachamim only have one Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim here. But according to Rabbi Meir, who says that both washings of the hand relate to the new clothing he's putting on, he's putting on the big days Ahav. Why doesn't he have two washings here? Must be our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir. Amalur Papa, Ben Rabbanan, Ben Rebeber, Chatab Shita, Big Day Kodesh, V'chata Levisha. Papa says that assumption is incorrect, and that the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir both agree that one washing has to do with the removal of the previous clothing, and one washing has to do with the putting on of the new clothing. If that's the case, then Rabbi Meir could fit in our Mishnah as well, because everybody agrees that when he takes off the Big Day Chol, he does not have to wash his hands. But then what do they argue about? This is what they argue about from Parshat Achrimot. It says there in Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuch of Gimel, Uvaron el Omoed, Upashat et Bigdei Abad Asher Lavash. He has to take off the clothing. Bevoel HaKodesh V'nicham Sham. Then it says, V'chatz B'sarov B'mayim B'makom Kadosh. He has to go to the mikveh in a makom Kadosh. V'lavash et Bigadav. V'yatzav Asat Olotov V'lata'am V'chiber V'adov V'adam. Then he has to be Lovesh. He has to put on his clothing. So the Gemara here learns the word Rachatz applies both to Pashat Ulavash. There's one rechitza associated with the taking off of the clothing, and one rechitza together with the levisha. It's red on both sides. Since the rachat sits between the pashat and lavash, we say that it's referencing both of them, and there's a requirement of kiddush yadayim raglayim for both of them. We'll learn all of this stuff again in more detail in the upcoming gemaras. So what Rav Papa says the machlok between them is this hekesh between pashat and lavash. Connection between taking off the clothing and putting on the clothing, and that is Rameir Selvar Mekish Pshita Levisha, that the stripping down of the clothing is connected to the putting on of the clothing. Malavisha Lovesh Vachar Gach Mekadesh. Just like when you put on the clothing, everybody agrees you put on the clothing first, then wash your hands. Abshita, so too the Pshita Poshet Vachar Gach Mekadesh. You do the activity first, take off the clothing, and then you wash your hands. Rabbanan Savri Mekish Pshita Levisha. They say, no, that you're doing that wrong. The stripping down has to do with the putting on the clothing. Malavishak shula vush mikadesh. Just like when he puts on his clothing, once he's dressed, he does the kiddush. So do apshitak shula vush mikadesh. When he's still dressed, he does the nitilat yadayim. So what Rav Papa says is, their machloket is simply about where the placement of that kiddush is vis-a-vis the stripping off of the clothing. And it has to do with how they view shita versus the levisha. Everybody gets the levisha first, then nitilat yadayim. So the question is, how does that relate to pshita? Does that mean pashut and then wash your hands? That's what Rabbi Meir says. Or do we say, no, just like you dress for the second washing, you should be dressed for the first washing, so therefore, you wash and then you take off the clothes. That's the position of the chachamim. So Amrulei, Rabban and the Rapapa, his talmidim said to Rapapa, but, umi matzei damei hochi. Can you really explain Rabbi Meir's position that way? Vatanya, we have a braita. Persusa din shabutz, beno le ben ha'am. This is a braita that references the first nitila. So, as opposed to later on, we have Rabbi Meir explicitly arguing on the Chachamim as to where the placement of a Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim is. In this Mishnah, we don't have him arguing. So the question is, did he argue? And Rav Papa is suggesting, no, he didn't argue. He would agree to the Chachamim's layout over here. The Talmid and Rav Papa say maybe not, because we have a bright that discusses this Tvilah, the first Tvilah, Al-Shar HaMayim. And it says over there, Pashat, he takes off his clothes, V'yarad V'taval, he goes down and goes to the mikveh. Allah, he comes out of the mikveh, Nistabeg, dries off, Hevilo Big Day Zahav. Puts on in the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, v'lavash, dressed, v'kidei shetav v'galav, and washes his hands. Rabbi Meir Omer, pashat. No, he takes off his begadim of kol, v'kidei shetav v'galav, he washes his hands, v'yarad v'taval, he goes down, goes to the mikveh, alav, and istabek, he comes up, dries off, v'yilo big day zahav v'lavash. Bring him the big day kuhunah, he gets dressed, v'kidei shetav v'galav, and he washes again. What you see here clearly is that Rabbi Meir believes that the washing is related to the begadim he's about to put on. There's no reason for him to wash his hands for taking off his whole bigadim. So that means that Rameir must believe that the washing has to do with the putting on the bigadim. If that's the case, in this Mishnah, the fact that it only mentions one Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim is not like Rabbi Meir. And that's what the Braita seems to support, that Rabbi Meir's understanding of why you do this is a Gzeirat HaKatuv. The Gzeirat HaKatuv is you wash your hand twice for the new bigadim you're putting on. One before you go to the mikveh, and one after you put the clothing on. And therefore, even in the first tevilah, you wash twice, because it's all related to the clothing you're about to put on. For the Rabbanan, one washing is related to the clothing you're taking off, one to the clothing you're putting on. So for the first washing, you're taking off big day chol, there is no washing. For the putting off the clothing, then you do wash your hands, because those are big day kodesh. How do they get to the 10 then, is at the end of the day. The end of the day, before he goes home, he has to take off his big day kodesh. And he'll do a kiddush yadayim raglayim there when he takes off the big day kodesh, and then puts on his own clothing. So he'll make up for the 10 over there. Rabbi Meir will have no washing in that case, whereas the Chachamim will have one washing in that case, where he's only taking off Big Day Kodesh and not putting on Big Day Kodesh, only putting on Big Day Chol. Amar Lahu, Rav Papa says back to his Talmidim, Itanya Tanya, says if it's a Braita, it's a Braita, I can't argue with it. Logic would not dictate that way. I would think that the argument has to do with the Drush and the Psukim, but if you have a Braita, Rabbi Meir argues even in this verse Tevilah, then you're right. And Rabbi Meir's whole Shita is premised on the fact that the two Nitilot have to do with the upcoming Levisha, and that's why he wants you to strip down first and then wash the first Nitila, because it has nothing to do with the first set of clothing. It all has to do with the second set of clothing. Gemara says, Bishlam Rabbi Meir Ayin Ud Mishkacha La'atzara Kiddushin. According to Rabbi Meir, if each one of the Tevilot has two washings, that's how I get to 10. El Rabbanon Tishavu. For the Rabbanon, you only have one in this first case. How do they get to 10? Amar Lecha Rabbanon Kiddusha Batra. There's that final Kiddush, that final washing of the hands, which I mentioned before. Kiposh Big Day Kodesh, Lash Big Day Chol. When he strips out of his Big Day Kodesh and puts on his clothing to go home, Avilei Hatam. He does it over there, and that's how you get to the 10th one. Okay, we'll stop over here.